This is NHPR News at 9:06.
Support for The Exchange Friday New Hampshire News Roundup is made possible by Centrix Bank. See beyond with Centrix Bank.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. It's our Friday New Hampshire News Roundup today in The Exchange, and here are some sounds from headlines around the Granite State this week.
We should encourage every student that's in this state to pursue as much education that he or she can do.
Providing benefits to people who break our laws is a slap in the face to every citizen, every legal immigrant, and every person waiting in another country to enter this country.
The key, though, is to avoid getting into this situation in the first place, to develop responsible budgeting, to stick to the budget, and to ensure that we don't end up in a situation where we're looking at a shutdown or risking default.
Publishing a list now gives those who want illegal access to firearms addresses to where these firearms are and has a possibility of putting more illegal guns out on the streets.
I will say that I believe, now subject to lots of changes, I mean, we just went through one big change where it was the Republicans that were going to get decimated in November. And now, in my opinion, because of Obamacare, which is really turning out to be a disaster, the Democrats have a chance of getting decimated in November.
From the top, that was Republican Representative Rick Ladd and fellow Republican Patrick Bick disagreeing on a bill to allow New Hampshire high school students living here illegally to pay in-state college tuition rates. GOP First Congressional District candidate Dan Innes describing his plan to calm the federal budget process. Democratic State Representative Jeff Goley presenting his bill to exempt gun purchase information from the state's right-to-know laws. And business mogul Donald Trump rallying the Republican faithful at a politics and eggs breakfast at St. Anselm College. Again, it's our Friday New Hampshire News Roundup today in The Exchange. And as we review some of the week's top stories, let's hear from you. The Exchange number is 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. Facebook is NHPR Exchange, all one word. We want your questions or comments about some of the headlines of the week, including a bill to encourage the state to bury power lines, a vote to reject the labeling of genetically modified foods, or perhaps the victory of Joe Kenney in the Republican Executive Council race. Our guests for this week's roundup are Norma Love, State House reporter for the Associated Press. And Norma, welcome back. Great to see you.
Good morning, Laura.
Also with us, Gary Reno, State House reporter for the Union Leader in New Hampshire Sunday News. And Gary, thanks for being here.
Oh, great to be here.
And also with us, Dean Spiliotis, civic scholar in the School of Arts and Sciences at Southern New Hampshire University, author of the website, nhpoliticalcapital.com. And Dean, thanks as always.
Good morning, Laura.
Well, Norma, I want to turn to you. There has been so much to keep up with this week at the State House, even though it's very early in the year. You've been covering the State House for a long time, Norma. Just describe how this second year typically unfolds and put all this activity that we're seeing there in that context of how things usually go in the second year of a session.
In a two-year session, the second year, you end up at the very beginning having a lot of activity on bills that were held over. So, and those are very controversial, some of the ones that we'll be talking about later. I like to describe it as a sports analogy. If you're a baseball fan, you have a preseason, which we're in, which is each house sorts its own bills and sends over the ones that it'd like the other to pass. It kills a bunch of them. It sends some to study. Then you get past what they call crossover, which is usually in March, and we're in the regular season where now I've got your bill and I'm trying to decide whether I like it or not, and we do another sort. And then we go into the postseason, which will be in May, where the real activity is on the big controversial bills that are going to pass or fail. And we have what we call conference committees where they try to negotiate differences. So a lot of the headlines you see now, a lot of those bills aren't going to make it. They're not going to go all the way to June.
That's interesting. So you see these really just fascinating headlines about a huge array of topics, scary, but a lot of them are just ideas being floated, bills being put out there, but they're not going to go anywhere like Norma said.
Yeah, particularly when we have a divided government like we have now, where the Democrats are in control of the House and the Republicans are in control of the Senate. A lot of these bills that the House can pass with even big majorities are dead on arrival in the Senate. Some of the stuff the Senate's going to pass is going to be dead on arrival in the House. And they're really hot topics, and everybody's very interested in them, but they're not going to go anywhere by the end of the session.
Yeah. Dean.
Yeah, it's fascinating to me to watch the array of topics that we've seen pop up in the news over the last couple of weeks. You know, a lot of it is driven by, you know, sort of activist agendas in both parties. Some of these are perennial issues that come up time and again. But we do have to keep it in perspective. A lot of the action we're seeing this week is in the House of Representatives. It's a Democratic chamber. We have a Republican Senate. So a number of these bills are just not going anywhere, at least in the current form. Perhaps, as Norma suggested, there'll be a conference committee in the spring. It's interesting. I had a comment from a friend the other day who saw that New Hampshire had voted to legalize the possession of small amounts of marijuana. He said, oh, you folks are going to be, you know, joining Colorado and Washington, lighting up in New Hampshire. It's not the case. This is the fifth time in a row, I think, that the House has approved decrim. They haven't even gotten the regulatory framework together yet for the medical marijuana, let alone doing something like this. Senate's probably not going to pass it. So, yeah, we have to keep in mind that you know, these a lot of these are very hot, controversial topics. I think it's great that we have a state legislative process that allows for an airing of these and hearings. But the political reality, a lot of these are they're just not going to move forward right now.
Norma, go ahead, jump back
in. Well, I think the other thing, this is an election year coming up. So some of these bills are there to put you on record. As Dean was saying, hey, right to work is coming up in the Senate next week. Okay. That is more of a Republican bill. They want right to work. That's not going to go anywhere, but they want people to be on record. They have other bills that the Democrats are putting forward for the same reason. And then you get these brochures in the mail next fall.
It says so-and-so voted for such-and-such, standing up for your right to such-and-such.
Correct.
Even if the bill didn't go anywhere and everybody pretty much knew it wouldn't. Well, it does make for an interesting conversation. And I want to ask you about a couple of those bills right now. And Gary, your paper reported this morning on a bill that's very interesting to a lot of people, especially north of the Notches. That's the House weighing in on the question of whether Northern Pass, the big proposed hydropower project from Hydro-Quebec, should have to bury its transmission line. So just give us an update there, Gary.
The bill basically suggests or says this is the preferred method of transmission lines.
If you doesn't say you must,
it
says
you
we
must,
we
but
suggest.
It says this is the preferred method that you bury the lines. This bill was supposed to get passed by a fairly small margin by the House on Wednesday, with the understanding it was going to the House Ways and Means Committee. The reason it was going to the Ways and Means Committee was there's a possibility of some state revenue from using the state right of way to bury the lines. Well, the chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee on Thursday said, I don't want the bill. So it gets, they had up until noon yesterday. Somebody had to reconsider to vote it again to bring it back up. Nobody filed, so the bill is headed to the Senate. Now, there's some people probably in the House who might have voted a different way if they thought this was the final vote on this. And now it's in the Senate, but the Senate has another bill which is even more direct. It says you must bury the lines.
Instead of we suggest,
yes,
it says you must. So Northern Pass officials, from what I understand, Gary, just from reading the Union Leader, are more worried than they were earlier this week.
I think they're quite a bit more worried than they were earlier this week, yes.
Go ahead, Norma.
Well, I think, though, that there's, as Gary pointed out, there's a real difference here. I mean, the bill that passed the House, they had a hard time in committee getting something out of committee, and they finally said, okay, we won't mandate it. We will just suggest. We will give you guidance. Well, if their Senate's position is, nah, we don't want just guidance. We want to mandate. That's the kind of thing where maybe it'll make it to the end and you'll have a conference committee, but there's a real difference there, and it's an important difference.
There was another bill concerning alternative energy projects. This one would have placed a moratorium on wind power projects until the state issues a comprehensive energy plan. Now, Gary, again, turning to you, what's driving this bill? Who are some of the voices that are speaking up about
what's
this?
What's driving this bill are all these proposed wind projects, particularly around Newfound Lake. There are like three different projects being proposed there. And people are saying, wait a minute, hold on. What are we looking at? We're going to be looking up and seeing nothing but these huge wind turbines. And so they get this bill through last year that said, we're going to take a time and we're going to set different policy. We're going to take a look at the policy. We're going to see if it's stringent enough, and we're going to take a sort of a time out here, but we're not going to put in a real moratorium. And the bill actually comes back and says it is a moratorium. But this also would affect Northern Pass. And the whole issue has yet to come up. It's going to be coming up very early in next Wednesday's session. But the whole problem is that now we have turned out a whole lot of people who are saying, this isn't a good idea. This is going to hurt the economic development in the state.
George Ball, the former commissioner of economic development, had a big editorial.
A lot of the construction unions are opposed to it. So it's gotten quite controversial.
Interesting. So a lot more push-pull with these bills.
And simply, we don't want to see all the turbines on the mountaintops.
Dean, your take on all
this? Yeah, this whole issue of wind power has been fascinating to me. You know, we have this goal in New Hampshire of having 25% of our energy be produced from renewables by 2025. And I was interested to learn that I think only 1.5% of New England's power at this point comes from wind. So there's a long way to go. And, you know, so we have that general goal, but there has been this issue of whether or not the Hassan administration really has kind of a sort of a clear, comprehensive energy plan going forward. You know, the governor has been kind of fairly reactive, sort of driven by what's going on with Northern Pass or specific wind projects. But there hasn't really been this sort of comprehensive push on energy. So, you know, this bill is really kind of a way to sideline these wind power projects, at least in the short term. There have been some other issues with, you know, with the site evaluation committee and some of the applications by this Spanish energy firm, Iberdrola, that is doing the Newfound Lake project. So it's been really interesting to see the extent to which kind of conceptually the push for renewables is very popular. But when you get down to the nitty gritty of, you know, having these huge wind turbines on ridge lines, people who are fairly progressive suddenly have a bit of a change of heart. So there's some fascinating politics here at the local level.
More conversation about the week's news coming up. Join our Friday New Hampshire News Roundup at 1-800-892-6477. Join us with your thoughts on some of the headlines that caught your attention. Coming up, we will be covering a couple gun bills that came before the legislature, one for background checks, another to exempt gun purchase information from the right to know laws. So we'll talk about that as well. You can join us, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org.
This is New Hampshire Public Radio, 919. Good morning. As a public radio service, the opinions and insights of our listeners drives much of what we do at NHPR. You can make your voice heard when you become a member of our Community Advisory Board. Find out more and fill out an application at nhpr.org. More of the New Hampshire News Roundup on The Exchange, then at 10 on The Diane Rehm Show. It's the Friday News Roundup of the week's top national stories. New Hampshire weather partly to mostly sunny today. High single numbers north, ranging lower teens south. Wind chills around 20 below, especially for the North Country. Support for NHPR comes from UR members, and support also comes to us from Centrix Bank. See beyond with Centrix Bank. Customized business banking for businesses, professionals, municipalities, and not-for-profit organizations online at centrixbank.com. And from Holly Oil, a full-service oil company keeping New Hampshire families warm since 1961, delivering bioheat in Manchester, Concord, and surrounding towns. Holly Oil, HALLEOIL.com. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, it's our Friday New Hampshire News Roundup, and we're covering some of the stories that made big headlines this week. This includes several bills aimed at alternative energy, the question of whether power lines should be buried. You can join us on that story. We're also going to talk about a couple gun bills that were before the legislature this week and some scrutiny of charitable gaming. We'll cover that in just a minute. You can join us, 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email to exchange@nhpr.org. Post a comment on our Facebook page, NHPR Exchange, all one word. The members of our roundup, Norma Love with the Associated Press, Gary Reno with the Union Leader, and Dean Spiliotis, author of the website nhpoliticalcapital.com. And all of you, a few gun bills before the legislature this year. We talked about one last week, guns and mental health. But Norma, there's a bill to require background checks before you can possess a gun, making it a criminal violation to sell firearms at a private sale or a gun show. So that would mean, I guess, Norma, correct me if I'm wrong, that instead of background checks just taking place at gun shops, they would take place everywhere. Is that right?
Well, the idea was that if you were going to do a private sale or you connected with someone on the internet, you would have to complete that through a license, a federally licensed gun dealer, and that dealer would then do the background check. There was a lot of pushback from gun owners on this bill, and interestingly enough, I didn't see anyone from the Attorney General's office there, which was
at the hearing.
At the hearing, unlike at the hearing the previous week on David Waters' bill on mental health and having the state report people who are adjudicated mentally ill to be part of the what they call the NICS or the background check system. So I don't think this bill has much of a chance of making it. It may make it out of the House. It may not, but certainly not through the Senate. It's a difficult subject because they had two parents who lost children in Sandy Hook testify. At one point, they had left, and someone I thought was a little bit rude and said, "Who let people from out of state come here and testify?" Well, it happens all the time, but it was an emotional hearing for them. And I don't think, regardless of that, that the bill has a chance in New Hampshire.
Well, and on the other side of this gun information issue, Gary Reno, there was another bill presented this week to exempt gun purchase information from the state's right to know laws. Now, what's that about?
Again, this is related to the Newtown incident, because after that incident, there was a paper in New York, upstate New York, who obtained through the right to know request the addresses and names of everyone in the community who had a concealed weapon permit and publish it. And so Jeff Gorley, who is a Manchester Democratic rep, has a bill which would basically exempt that information from the right to know law so that people could not get it. He said, "I don't want this to happen here in New Hampshire." The idea is that if you put those names out there, then the criminals will go out and get these guns from the houses.
They'll say, "Oh, Gary Reno has, you know, right. 10 guns at his house, right. So let's go to his house."
But again, this bill, it wasn't a very large hearing. I was really surprised. I thought it would be going on for quite some time, but it really didn't. And again, we didn't have the Attorney General. We didn't have Department of Safety. We didn't have any people there. So it's going to get lumped into a whole bunch of other right-to-know bills that we have this year. And the committee, the House Judiciary Committee, wants to take a look at all of them and say, well, how do we really want to change the right to know law here, and let's take a real look at it.
Dean?
Yeah, you know, gun control has been a really tough issue this year for people who are looking to make some of these changes. This this particular bill dealing with background checks for gun shows and internet sales, very similar to the one that was blocked in the U.S. Senate. So there was this initial kind of flurry of activity after the Sandy Hook shooting, but that really seems to largely have dissipated. You don't really hear much about gun control at the federal level at this point, and even though these hearings are quite dramatic and there's a lot of passion on both sides, kind of the reality of getting something through the state legislature, I think, is just very difficult and sort of similar to what we've seen at the federal level.
Well, it's interesting to hear, Norma, you and Gary say, you know, I thought there might be a lot of people at this, but it turns out that, you know, the big players that you would expect to be at a gun bill hearing didn't show up. So that says something to you.
Well, there were certainly a lot of people testifying. At the background checks bill, there were certainly a lot of anti, testifying people who thought that. And some of it was, as you said, very passionate to the point of almost being rude. And still, you know, going into some of these bills, we talked at the top, how do we as reporters sort these things out? We may cover the issue because of the fact that it had a Sandy Hook element or because it's been a national topic, but you know in your heart that some of these bills don't have a lot of chance. The mental health bill was the one bill that I thought had a chance, and I think it now has some – there were some issues raised on that bill that has made people step back and say, maybe we better think about this again.
All right. Well, again, the number for you to join our Friday New Hampshire News Roundup here in the Exchange, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. We're covering some of the stories that made headlines this week, including bills aimed at alternative energy projects like hydropower and wind power, also several gun bills that got attention this week. You can join us with your questions and comments on those and other stories that caught your attention. 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Facebook is NHPR Exchange, all one word. And Dean, you put those gun bills in the national context, and I want to ask you about another bill that got attention in New Hampshire this week, a lot of attention, and is also part of a national push. This is a push to label foods which may have genetically modified organisms, or GMO foods. That's what people call them. This has been an enormous debate around the country and here in New Hampshire. The House this week rejected this labeling bill. I wonder what you make of that.
Yeah, and this is something I've done a fair bit of reading about. I was interested to learn that something like 70% of processed foods have at least one ingredient made or derived from a genetically modified crop. There are a number of problems with this particular bill. It would hold retailers responsible for labeling, not the manufacturers or food processors, which I think was viewed as kind of a real economic hardship for small business. The other issue is it would be hard to regulate food coming in from out of state, to sort of put this regulatory burden on the state is a little bit problematic. Typically, you think of this as an FDA issue. So, the arguments against it were, there's this whole debate about whether or not GMOs are bad for you that's been raging now for a while. But I think that there were some real practical concerns here. The financial cost for retailers, the problematic enforcement at the state level, and the need for the FDA to really drive this particular bus.
Norma?
Well, I found part of the debate very educational. There was a chemist who got up to testify and said, you're not really going to achieve what you want by putting a label on this. And she gave a really good example of sugar beets being genetically engineered. They do this with corn and other crops to make them disease resistant. So by the time you go through all the processing, you end up with sugar, which is a pure product. So you'd be labeling something that has nothing in it that's genetic material. I thought that was interesting.
I want to ask you all very quickly about one or two other bills and then turn to some of the political news this week, including that we now have a Republican nominee for the Executive Council seat, long held by Ray Burton. But Gary Reno, to you, charitable gaming got some scrutiny this week. How come?
Well, we had a commission this summer and fall that studied, we've tried to put together a regulatory structure for casino gambling if we ever had it. That was one of the criticisms that some House members had when they killed the bill last year. So when they hired a consulting firm to come in and help them, this consulting firm took a look at what was out there. And they were, number one, surprised by the pervasiveness of, quote-unquote, charitable gambling, which I don't think most people have any idea how much of it's going on in this state. And number two, how little controls we have over it. And so this bill was the result of that, trying to get some control over what's going on now, to the point where the charities are getting what they deserve, the state's getting what it's deserved, and people can be assured who go to these facilities that it's up on the up and up. And so this bill was up for a public hearing. Didn't really have a lot of opposition. There was some, but some of the larger operators in the charitable gaming industry here in the state, they came in and they backed the bill.
So how big is it, Gary?
How big is it? Well, charities last year made over $13 million.
The charities made $13 million. The
charities made $13 million. They're guaranteed 35% of the profits, if you will. And so that tells you how large that is.
Norma?
I mean, there's one estimate from the Racing and Charitable Gaming Commission that $75 million goes through charity betting. And you can say bingo is a loser. Lucky Seven tickets make up for it. And then you have these table games. And one person I talked to said, it depends, whether you get these $13 deck of cards that are hard to mark or you get the ones you get for a dollar down at Walmart. I mean, those are the kinds of things they want to regulate. Or you get the kind of dice that they use in Las Vegas, which are a casino grade versus the dice you get, at some drugstore. There are little tiny things that make a difference that I never knew about.
Wow. Who knew? Me neither. Well, again, I want to invite our listeners to join us. It's our Friday New Hampshire News Roundup. We'd love your questions and comments about some of the stories of the week, from State House debates about gun control and GMOs to some of the political news of the week, which we'll turn our attention to now. Again, the number for you to join us, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Post a comment on our Facebook page, NHPR Exchange, all one word. And Dean Spiliotis, there was an election this week. Earlier this week, Republicans now have their nominee for Executive Council District 1 seat vacated by the death of longtime counselor Ray Burton. So who's the lucky guy, and was this a surprise?
Republican Joe Kenney, hard to know whether or not it was a surprise. I mean, he's a pretty well-known among Republicans. He was in the New Hampshire House for four terms from 2002 to 2008. He lost to Governor Lynch in a bid for governor in 2008. So he's reasonably well-known. You know, I talked to a reporter who was going around to the polling places on Tuesday, and he said you wouldn't even know there was an election going on. There were only 6,700 votes total, roughly. So it's a very small election. Kenney did win by 1,000 votes over Christopher Boothby.
Which is pretty impressive, yeah. Given that only 6,700 people
absolutely.
Voted.
Absolutely, yeah. So he's a 53-year-old colonel in the Marines with 30 years of service. It's interesting, you know, he's going to be running against Michael Cryins, who is unopposed. He's a longtime Grafton County commissioner who a New Hampshire native who now lives in Hanover. What's interesting to me about these executive council races is what I've observed over the last couple of election cycles is the extent to which they've kind of been folded into the larger partisan battle between Republicans and Democrats. I mean, the job pays about $15,000 a year, and it's now running for executive council has now turned into sort of a full time political campaign, much in the same way running for the House or the Senate has. So I think people recognize that that the executive council is another opportunity to engage the process. Right? You have a say on state contracts. You have a say on court appointments and department heads. It's a fairly politicized office now. So even though there were only 6,700 people voted, everyone I know in the political community who follows politics closely was paying a lot of attention to this race.
Well, and it was interesting because Boothby was thought by some to be the leader in this. Bill Binney, the wealthy media mogul in New Hampshire who ran for U.S. Senate a couple years back, he was backing Chris Boothby. I kept hearing his ads on the radio, Dean. So there was some big money behind Boothby.
Yeah, and it's interesting to think of there being big money behind
in
candidates.
An executive
race. But there was also in the last general election, I recall some of those executive council races were sort of as intense as some of the races for House and Senate in the state.
What do you think, Gary?
Well, I think the executive council, I mean, it used to be you had people there who ran and they were there forever, people like Ray Streeter and people like that. But and even Ray Burton, obviously, he was there almost for 40 years. But now it seems to be like people are starting viewing it as a stepping stone to higher office. There are three people sitting on the executive council now that you will see running for higher office within
Absolutely.
The next 4 years.
You want to give us those names?
Chris Sununu, Colin Van Onstein, and Chris Pappas.
All right. Well, again, interesting stuff. And good to have an election here in the middle of January. It gives us political types something to watch. The number here in the exchange is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Facebook is NHPR Exchange, all one word. Dean, there was also some presidential politicking in the state this week. Donald Trump was at the venerable Politics and Eggs event, speaking to an overflow crowd at St. Anselm College. Now, why was the Donald here, and what did he have to say?
Well, it's interesting. You know how we've been saying how every time Scott Brown steps into the state, the national media swarm on the story? Donald Trump is that at a much, much larger scale. He really has a remarkable ability to draw a crowd. Yeah, this is the Politics and Eggs breakfast forum. It's quite popular. It's been going on for years, and candidates come in and talk to people in the state. This was a record crowd. In fact, they had to move it from the Institute of Politics at St. A's up to the main dining center just to accommodate the size of the crowd.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. It was, and it got a lot of coverage. Trump is one of these people he always talks about possibly running for president. He didn't talk about it in this particular speech, but he has been mentioning it. I think in that vein, I think he hurt himself in the last election cycle with all the stuff with President Obama and the birth certificate. I think that hurt him. But he has an uncanny ability to drive the media narrative for whatever period of time he wants to do so. He also is someone who has hinted that he might run for governor against Andrew Cuomo in New York. Don't know that he's going to do that. I thought a couple interesting things he said. You know, he said that the Affordable Care Act is going to be the undoing of President Obama's legacy. He's not the only Republican to say that, and you know, history will decide. He also said that Mitt Romney should have and could have won the race. I'm not so sure about that when you look at the demographics and the way in which the party engaged those demographics nationally. But nonetheless, you know, he knows how to promote himself. And if he decides he wants to hint at running for either governor or president, the media is going to love the story, and we're just going to have to live with them being here.
Well, one other quickie, Dean. You said that Donald Trump is not the only Republican to warn that the Affordable Care Act will be the undoing of the Democrats. Marilinda Garcia made the same message when she launched her campaign as a Republican for the 2nd Congressional District this week.
Right. She's going to be challenging Gary Lambert in the Republican primary for the right to run against Congresswoman Annie Custer in the 2nd Congressional District. Marilinda is a four-term state representative from Salem. She's 31 years old. She was designated a Republican rising star by the Republican National Committee in the fall. She has about 70 House reps in New Hampshire already supporting her. You know, she wants to bring kind of a more youthful message. If you look at the demographics of the vote in New Hampshire, younger voters have consistently voted more Democratic. So here's an opportunity for a conservative Republican to maybe make a more youthful appeal. She also has some Tea Party energy behind her. I had a pretty lengthy conversation with her in December, and she's clearly very motivated by the Affordable Care Act and Obamacare. That really is, and government spending. Needs to do a little bit of homework on foreign policy. You know, you don't expect a state rep to know about foreign policy, but if you're going to be in Congress, you're going to be voting on sanctions. You're going to be potentially voting on declarations of war, et cetera. So I'm sure she'll get up to speed on that. But yeah, she's kicked off her campaign, and we'll see how she does.
There was a bill in the House this week, Norma Love, that opponents of did some grumbling. They said this is just Democrats trying to appeal to the youthful base. This is a bill allowing in-state tuition rates for college students here illegally, brought here as kids by their parents. This caused a big stir. How many people are we talking about, Norma?
Maybe 10, maybe 15 would take advantage of it. Yeah, I mean, they're probably the estimates are there may be 100 total that would qualify, but because these students wouldn't get any federal aid of any kind or scholarship aid, you have to have the financial means. The difference in money between in-state and out-of-state tuition at UNH is about $13,000. So there were a lot of people arguing. These are kids, by and large, who've been brought here when they were young by parents. They find out maybe when they're teenagers that their parents were here and they're illegal residents, but they can't apply for any kind of citizenship until they're 18. So what do you do? And so the move is to give them a little bit of help. Now, the other side says it's really unfair because foreign students who get visas and kids from other states are penalized.
All right, more conversation coming up. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
This is New Hampshire Public Radio, 939. Good morning.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, the Friday News Roundup. A federal review board says the NSA data collection program is illegal. And Virginia's attorney general announces he'll fight the state's ban on gay marriage. Then Syrian peace talks open in Switzerland with harsh exchanges from both sides. All coming up on the Diane Rehm Show.
The Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 till noon on NHPR, where we get support from you, our members, and support also comes to us from Balkus Law and Jennifer Balkus, with offices in Concord and Portsmouth, focusing on family law, divorce, and mediation. Diligent, thorough, and attentive. Online at balkuslaw.com. And Froling Energy, providing and installing high-efficiency wood pellet and wood chip boilers for commercial and institutional space heating. Online at frolingenergy.com. 940, this is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Monday in The Exchange, we check in with New Hampshire's housing market. Today, it's our Friday New Hampshire News Roundup, and you can join us, 1-800-892-6477. We'd like your thoughts on some of the stories we're talking about, whether it's some of the bills aimed at gun control or alternative energy projects. We've also caught up on some state politics, including the race that is now set for the District 1 Executive Council seat. You can join us on these stories and more at 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Post a comment on our Facebook page, NHPR Exchange. That's all one word. And all of you, I did want to ask you about another bill before the legislature that we didn't get to earlier. Norma Love, and maybe you too, Gary Reno. This is a bill that, made, again, a lot of passion, a lot of headlines, a bill on animal cruelty, which opponents called ag gag. Now, this was tabled this week, which basically means it's off for now. It might come back. This got a lot of attention, Norma. What was this all about?
Well, there's been a feeling that if we're going to stop abuse in, I think in other states it's been in chicken coops or wherever, people have gone in and they've videotaped, and then they've used this in ad campaigns against these organizations. And the bill is basically aimed at requiring anyone who witnesses livestock abuse to report it. And if you videotape or have other evidence, to turn it in. And if you fail, there was a penalty, and I think the fine was $250. The feelings by those for it were, we have to stop it. If you're just holding on to the videotape, you're allowing the abuse to continue. The feeling on the other side was that, what if I don't know what abuse is, but I'm now penalized, I'm fined for not knowing it? I mean, I have relatives in Texas that have ranches. I can tell you that I can see my cousin with his cows and know that he's not abusing them, but someone else might think that, hey, he's swapped that cow on the butt. Whatever, is he abusing the cow? I mean, so the bill was tabled by a large margin, and I doubt it comes back.
Yeah. Wow. Gary, did you cover this, follow any of those hearings?
A little bit, but I think what was interesting was the reaction some of this bill got, because it became national. I mean, we had the National Photographers Association, I believe, who came out against it and said, wait a minute, you want to hold us responsible for something like this? So, I mean, it certainly had a large audience. And it certainly brought a lot of people out to say, wait a minute, what are we doing here?
Yeah, and it was interesting because it was labeled an animal cruelty, aimed at animal cruelty. Yeah. And yet some of the people who fight against animal cruelty didn't like it.
No, they didn't. They were opposed to it.
And it means that it's tabled now. So we're done for now.
I mean, it could come back. I mean, as you said, any bill that's on the table, and again, we're in the preseason.
As you described earlier,
yes,
Norma.
Yes, any bill that's been tabled can be brought back before we hit that magical crossover deadline by a majority vote and passed. But once you cross that deadline, even if you take it off the table and pass it, now you run into deadlines with the Senate, and it's a little more difficult to do anything with it. So, I mean, for all intents and purposes, I think it's probably dead.
Well, this week, in fact, today, Gary Reno, fans of Granny D, Doris Haddock, are celebrating her birthday today, even though she passed away several years ago. But they're doing it, Gary, in a way that would have made Mrs. Haddock proud. What are they doing today to celebrate Granny D?
It's hard to imagine, but people are outside walking today.
Yeah, they picked a heck of a time to walk, but yeah.
This whole week has been kind of difficult, but they started up in Pittsburgh, and they're walking all the way to Nashua to honor Granny D. And the whole issue of campaign finance reform, too, and it's obviously what they're trying to bring attention to.
And remind people who don't remember Granny D, Dean Spiliotis, why walking in memory of Granny D is so important.
Well, she, a number of years ago, did a walk, I think it was a walk across the United States.
Yeah, she was 89 or 90.
Yes, to raise awareness of this issue. And then she also ran against Judd Gregg for Senate and lost, but someone who's had a high profile in the Democratic Party here for many years. It was interesting to me watching some of the video of the group walking across the state, and I just kind of wonder from sort of a political science perspective, they said they're walking to raise awareness of campaign finance. I was trying to figure out sort of what the mechanism is by which you see these people walking and then you think we need to change campaign finance laws. I mean, I understand the idea of having media availability and whatnot. It's an interesting idea. I'm not sure it's going to have any impact on the debate.
Well, hats off to them for walking over the past couple weeks because it's been very cold. So, and happy birthday to Granny D. All of you, but you, Norma, first, I think I wanted to ask you about an effort in Manchester to beautify the city. And as we all know, Manchester has been making some big efforts in recent years to beautify downtown, to bring folks back. There's been a lot of talk about the revitalization of downtown Manchester. Now city artists are invited to paint utility boxes in the city. And Norma, I have to admit, when this story came up, I said, what's a utility box?
Well, those big green, gray-green boxes that you see generally on street corners.
They make the lights go on and off.
Yeah, they make the lights go on and off. But I think the effort there is to, I think you would, to file out an application. It's not simply run out and paint the box. And then they'll give them a stipend and say you have to keep this from being vandalized for X amount of time. You do your design and keep it. And I don't know, it might be pretty.
Yeah, so it's not just that anybody can run out and paint this, Gary.
No, it's being run through an organization called 550 Arts Center, which has been an organization in Manchester for quite a few years that has tried to involve the arts community more in the city's process. And, I mean, the real issue here is they're trying to get the graffiti off these boxes because they tend to have they tracked graffiti, and they're trying to make them look good and make it a little bit more presentable and a little bit nicer look to the downtown area particularly.
So the artist will not only be responsible for coming up with a design and actually doing it on the utility box, but also be responsible for making sure
the graffiti gets removed and painted over or whatever.
Okay, that's a lot of work there.
It sure is for $300.
Yeah. It's more than you get paid for serving in the New Hampshire legislature.
Especially on a day like today.
Right. Wow. Well, that's great. And it'll be interesting to see how those look. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477 is the number for you to join us on our Friday New Hampshire News Roundup. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. And here's an email that came in from Doug in Mason. He says, the point against the ag gag bill was, because if someone were doing an investigation to prove long-term abuse, they would have been required to turn in their first video or face penalties, which would mean the end of an investigation and the person making the video would certainly lose their job. Norma, go ahead. I think that was Doug is expressing it very well. That was the concern.
That was the concern, that if you are forced to turn over your video, one argument was, well, you're allowing the abuse to continue, and the other was, you may be stopping something that is going to achieve a greater goal. Obviously, the two sides clashed over it, and the bill is on the table. Because I think that in New Hampshire, I think more than that, I think the greater issue was, could I, as an average citizen, know what abuse was, and I would be required to report it or face a fine.
All right. Well, Doug, thank you for that email. And speaking of animals and controversy surrounding their treatment, Dean Spiliotis, the mystery widens in Nashua over an incident a few weeks ago where State Representative David Campbell got into trouble for running over some ducks at a hotel complex. This is a story that we've touched on over the weeks, but then there were some new events that happened just this week.
Yeah, this has been an interesting story. As you may recall from the story, Nashua Police Commissioner Thomas Pappas, who's a friend of David Campbell, I believe came and picked him up after the incident, and then called police to ask if Campbell could come in the next day to answer questions. They said that was all right. He was subsequently charged with an illegal taking of waterfowl, and he paid a fine. To me, that sounds like hunting at the wrong season. But nonetheless, that's sort of how this was classified. And I guess there was some question over whether or not he had had a few drinks. Although Representative Campbell says he was not intoxicated, there was really no way to check because he was taken home and not brought in until the next day. So there have been some Nashua aldermen who have been calling for Pappas to step down, that he got that he shouldn't have gotten involved in this. The Attorney General's office is reviewing the situation as well. And as I said, Campbell has apologized and paid a fine for running over the ducks.
So there's a question as to whether the police should have even gotten involved in this
I think it's the police commissioner, whether the police commissioner should have stepped in. I mean, he's Campbell's personal lawyer, but my understanding is that there's another lawyer that represented Campbell because Pappas never represents people in police matters. So I think he stepped in as a friend, and now the spotlight has shifted to him.
Interesting. All right. And there's been some issues concerning police in Nashua anyway, with the whole Mayor Donnelly Lozo issue and her husband and so forth. So lots to untangle there. We'll probably be following up as this unravels over the next couple weeks. Next week on The Exchange, I want to let everybody know we're going to be covering a couple big state house debates. We'll be looking at that guns and mental health bill that you referenced earlier, Norma. Also, the issue of legalizing marijuana. And Dean, you talked about this earlier. This is something going on nationally. It's being debated here in New Hampshire, but we're not even close yet.
Yeah, it's a complicated topic when you really get into it, because there is a discussion about the extent to which this would be a fruitful source for tax revenue. One of the arguments in favor of it is if you regulate it and you tax it at 25%, let's say, you can make millions of dollars of revenue for the state. Other people say that, well, if you allow personal cultivation of some number of plants, That's going to essentially make it hard to really track or enforce. And then there's another issue about whether or not it's a gateway drug. Is it something people can do recreationally? Is it addictive? Does it lead to doing heavier types of drugs? So, you know, my biggest issue for here in New Hampshire is, you know, we haven't really even gotten the regulatory framework in place for medical marijuana. There was a lot of concern going into that, that it was going to take a long time to ramp up. So this would be another whole layer on top of that. And I also think there's a feeling that, you know, we really need to see how things go in Colorado and Washington. And it is still technically illegal under federal law. So, even though, as I said, it's been voted on, I think approved 5 times now in the House, Governor Hassan, who supported medical marijuana, has said she would oppose decrim for small amounts.
Again, we'll be looking at that next week on The Exchange. Also, guns and mental health. And also, we'll be following up on President Obama's State of the Union address, something I'm guessing, Dean, you'll be watching next week. And I love asking all of you at the end of the show what you're going to be tracking next week. So go ahead, Dean. Why don't you go first?
I am going to be watching the State of the Union address. There's all this discussion now that there's going to be a new theme coming out of the Obama administration about income inequality. My guess is we'll see that echoed at the local level as well with discussions about minimum wage and other economic issues. Looking at these congressional races developing, it is interesting to see Representative Garcia get into the race.
She's got Gary Lambert's in with her.
Yes, Gary Lambert's in her, and then, you know, as you mentioned, the first congressional district with Dan Innes, he's been talking a little bit. He'll be running against Frank Ginta. So these races are starting to heat up a little bit, and you know, of course, there's always the specter of Scott Brown. Hovering not too far away, although I haven't heard much about him, at least for this week. And then, you know, at the state level, for me, it's kind of figuring out, given the introduction that Norma gave us at the beginning of the hour, like, which are the bills that are actually have some staying power, and the ones that we're all going to be here talking about in the spring. A lot of this other stuff, it's interesting to see what's percolating in an election year,
right?
But a lot of it's not going anywhere.
What are you watching, Norma?
Two gambling bills in particular. One in Tuesday, Manchester Democrat Senator Lou Del Sandro's gambling bill is coming up for a hearing. I think it's going to be competing with a House gambling bill we haven't seen yet that came out of the commission that met over the summer and the fall.
That was the commission to look at regulations.
Regulations, but they added in one casino, which Governor Hassan has said she'll only support one casino. And Senator Del Sandro's bill, I believe, has 2 locations that it would legalize. So those are the 2 main players in this. I'm not sure which one will survive, but certainly the hearing on Tuesday morning on that bill. And then the House on Wednesday, very near the beginning, if they don't change their minds and move it off again, Keno. There's a committee that is recommending approving Keno, which is it's like putting your little toe into the electronic gambling water, even though the House has killed video slot proposals over the years. And what Keno would do is it would put maybe in 250 bars and restaurants around the state a screen, like if you see the sports, the TV screen with the different sports. So there'd be one every 6 minutes, there'd be winning numbers. And you would go in and you would take a slip like you do a Powerball slip, and you'd mark a certain number of slots or numbers that you would pick and pay how much you paid, how many numbers would determine your odds of winning. And then you would hand it in, and then every 6 minutes the game would show numbers and you would get paid off. And that's Keno. And the Lottery Commission would like to add this. There are 15 states that do it, including Massachusetts.
So you have a chance to do a little gambling. It sort of seems like a cross between gambling and lottery tickets.
Or gambling and bingo. I don't know. Yeah. But it's
while you're waiting.
It would be the first electronic interaction type gambling in the state.
How about you, Gary?
Well, certainly Senator D'Alessandro's gambling bill on Tuesday is going to be, I think, a pretty good indicator of what we're going to see coming up. Because as Norma said, we have the 2 bills. One in the House is going to start and one in the Senate. And we can be sure that the one in the Senate will pass, but really the one to watch is the one in the House, because that's where the action is going to be. We know what the Senate feels about it. The House is always the one where you wonder whether they're going to pass it or not. Is this regulatory structure that they put together, is that enough to convince enough people to put it over the top?
Because the House has always been the graveyard for gambling bills.
Yep.
Yeah.
So that'll be interesting. And the bill that we talked about earlier today, the moratorium on the wind farms. That bill will be coming up early Wednesday before the full House. And that, I'm sure, we'll have a lengthy debate over that.
Yeah, that's a big deal.
It is.
A moratorium on wind farms, given the desire for renewable energy, given that there are a couple companies that are interested in building here.
And we do have – it would hold off until we have a state energy policy. And we are in the process of redoing our state energy policy. There was a bill that passed a couple of years ago that I think it's due at the end of this year, where we have a report that says this is where we need to be.
Okay. Well, Tina just sent in a comment. She says, my concern with the non-passage of the GMO labeling vote this week is that the elected representatives for the state have not voted the wishes of their constituents. It has been said that upwards of 92% of New Hampshire residents believe we have the right to know. Tina, thank you for that email. And the conversation, by the way, even though we're closing out the show, the conversation continues on our Facebook page, NHPR Exchange. So Tina and others, thank you for your comments this hour, and you can keep the conversation going on our Facebook page. Norma Love, good to see you. Thank you very much for being
thank
here.
Thank you, Laura.
Norma Love, State House reporter for the Associated Press. Gary Reno, keep up the good work. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Gary Reno, State House reporter for the Union Leader and New Hampshire Sunday News. And Dean Spiliotis, thank you, and we'll see you next week.
Sure, my pleasure, Laura.
Dean Spiliotis, civic scholar in the School of Arts and Sciences at Southern New Hampshire University, author of the website nhpoliticalcapital.com. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our producers are Ellen Grimm and Faith Meixel. Our volunteer is Priscilla Malcolm. Our intern is James Pouliot. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The Exchange's executive producer is Keith Shields, and I'm Laura Kanoy.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you missed any part of today's program, listen to The Exchange anytime at nhpr.org.
Next week on The Exchange, we begin with a look at New Hampshire's housing market. Many feel we're on a path to a slow but steady recovery, while a few say we're in danger of another bubble. Then the pros and cons of Greek life on college campuses. And later, we take up the debate over marijuana as New Hampshire considers whether to legalize small amounts for recreational use. Send us your thoughts by email, Facebook, and join us all next week for The Exchange. Every morning, live at 9 and again at 8 p.m. on NHPR.
Diane Rehm Show next at 10 o'clock on New Hampshire Public Radio, where support comes from UR members and from Centrix Bank. See beyond with Centrix Bank. Banking solutions customized to your business. Information available at centrixbank.com. And Dana Center at St. Anselm College presenting world banjo artist Bella Fleck in concert with the Imaginative String Quartet Brooklyn Rider January 30th at 7:30. Details at anselm.edu/Dana.
These are the stations of New Hampshire Public Radio.
WEVO, Concord, 89.1.
WEVS, Nashua, 88.3.
WEVH, Hanover, 91.3.
WEVN, Keene, 90.7.
WEVC, Gorham, 107.1.
WEVJ, Jackson, 99.5.
WEVF, Colebrook, 90.3.
And WEVQ, Littleton, 91.9.
And online at nhpr.org.
It is 10 o'clock.
From WAMU and NPR in Washington, I'm Diane Rehm. A federal watchdog board says the NSA program to collect mass phone data is illegal and should be shut down. Treasury Secretary Jack Lew warns the U.S. will hit the debt ceiling at the end of February if Congress does not act to raise it.